When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be confusing. Like Swedish techno confusing.
Bark, bark, meow, meow. Dance with me, purple cow. Bark, bark, meow, meow. Ooh, you lovely cow.
Geico makes it easy. With 24/7 access, all you have to do is go to Geico.com and you could save money on car insurance. It just makes sense. Unlike, you know.
Dance with me, purple cow. I like your moves.
Blog Talk Radio.
Special guest on our show. We're being joined by King of the Cage fighter Heather Bassett and Aggressive Combat Sports co-owner and matchmaker Eugene Perez. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome them to our show. Heather and Eugene, welcome guys for coming.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Glad you guys could join us. We're going to jump into a little bit of MMA and some college wrestling first. So if you want to follow us on social media, go to at MyMMAnews or at Carol's Corner, and you can find me on Twitter at JIBLITZ77 or Carol's Corner on MMA on Facebook. So feel free to follow us on social media. If you want to call in, dial 213-943-3517. So feel free to contact us, have questions for our guests. Now we're going to jump over on Sunday, January 31st, My MMA News brings you Ashley Evans Smith, free women's basics of MMA and self-defense seminar. It's free from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., hosted at the Hybrid MMA Gym 570 Gym, located at 370 North Cortland Street, East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. To RSVP your free spot, call 570-350-2818 or by emailing them at MMAreporter@mymmanews.com. But real quickly, in college wrestling over the weekend, number 5 Oklahoma State shuts out number 18 Pittsburgh Panthers 36-0. Penn sweeps Sacred Heart 31-6 and Army West Point 24-12. Trailing 14-6 after 6 matches, Kent State 10-3 on the season, 3-1 in the MAC conference, came storming back for a 19-14 victory at Eastern Michigan Sunday afternoon at the Convocation Center. The number 21 Golden Gophers of Minnesota upset number 8 Rutgers 17-16. Oklahoma Sooners cruise past West Virginia 23-11. The number 4 Mizzou rolls past number 19 Central Michigan University 26-9 on their way to the 37th straight dual meet win. Columbia beats Brown 16-15. Cale Sanderson and his Nittany Lions hammer Northwestern 46-4 on the road. Boise State snags a win against North Dakota State University by a score of 19-18. Bingham drums Hofstra 31-10. World champion Kyle Snyder returns to the Buckeyes lineup and lifts them to a 21-17 victory over the Nebraska Cornhuskers. And number 10, Michigan, remains unbeaten in the Big Ten after defeating Illinois 25-14. And now we're going to roll over to last night's fights. Did either one of you watch the fights last night, Eugenia or Heather?
No, I didn't get a chance to.
I caught some of the fights, not all of it.
All right. Well, we'll just go through the real quick of the results from last night. I'm sure everyone knows by now Dominic Cruz defeated TJ Dillashaw on a split decision for the bantamweight title. Eddie Alvarez and Anthony Pettis had a split decision as well, 29-28, 28-9, 28-28. Travis Brown TKO'd Matt Mitrione in the third round. And Francisco Trinaldo defeated Ross Pearson by unanimous decision. On the undercard, Patrick Cote TKO'd Ben Saunders. Ed Herman defeated Tim Bosch in the second round by TKO. Chris Wade of Long Island, Islip, New York, defeated Baghdad via submission, a rear naked choke in the first round. And Luke Sanders defeated Maximo Blanco by submission in the first round. Eugene, you said you watched a little bit of fights. Did you hear about any controversy?
Yeah, I watched some of Mitrione's fight. I caught some of the Alvarez fight, and I caught most of the Dillashaw Dominic Cruz fight.
All right, cool. So now, you saw the Mitrione fight. What did you think of the eye pokes? And do you think that makes a huge difference in the fight?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can't see, you can't fight. You know, I really do. I think fighters should be held more accountable for that. You know, I mean, you got some fighters that are just notorious for it.
John Jones, yeah, he's
John
very
Jones,
notorious.
John Jones being one of them. You know, I understand. You got your hands out. You're trying to control the distance, but there's got to be a penalty for that. You know, they really has to. The refs really need to look more into it, because somebody's gonna get hurt. You know, and look at Mitrione's eye from last night. Not that it was only the poke, but
yeah, that thing swelled up like a giant egg right above his
eyeball. That might be the worst eye injury I've ever seen in MMA.
Yeah, that thing, it was blown up by the time he was walking out of the cage. It was nasty.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
I agree with you. I think they need to be stricter on the eye poke. I honestly believe that they should start thinking about doing second eye poke. You're taking a pointer right away.
I think it should be held just like any other penalty. You know, you get an eye poke, I think it should be, just like a kick to the groin. You know, it should be handled the same exact way.
Now, do you think, some fighters, because I know it wasn't, like, Herb Dean, who's kind of all over the country. I believe it was a Massachusetts ref. Like, do you think that it's just a matter of educating these referees to kind of be on top of one eye poke?
I think if it's not in the rules, how could you expect the referee to enforce it? Then it's
True.
Just an opinion. You know, then
True.
It's just an opinion. I don't think it has to do with where the ref was. You know, if it's not stated in the rules, then the ref, what's he going to do? He's only following what he knows. You know, I think a lot of these states, I think they do a good job for the most part, certifying their officials, letting the officials gain a lot of experience before they do big cards like the UFC. You know, because, listen, we even got referees that are in the UFC right now. You gotta understand, the athletic commission picks the referees at the state. You know, that's why Herb Dean is certified in multiple states. John McCarthy, Big Dan, they're certified in multiple states. And, because of their experience and their reputation, they get requested on these cards, on these higher
okay.
level cards. You know, they work for the state. They don't work for the UFC.
Yeah.
But even some of the guys that the states have picked, have made many mistakes. Herb Dean being one of them. Herb Dean let Chris Weidman damn near get murdered and
yeah,
stopped the fight. 87 unanswered blows or something like that.
Yeah, it was up
and
there. It was rough on the
watch. At that point, what do you say? Herb Dean is not experienced enough.
True.
You know, the guy has hundreds of fights under his belt.
True. Now that could be a whole different story. You could talk about being title fight and whatnot. Heather, as a fighter, have you ever been poked in the eye, and what kind of effect has that had on you, if you have?
No, I've been lucky. I've never had that experience. Hopefully, we'll never have that. I think that would be one of the most painful and distracting things that could happen.
I agree with you. It definitely is a distracting accident, I guess you could call it, because I think it's a game changer. I really do. I feel Like Mitrione, he got a pretty nasty thumb in the eye. I think that could hurts your vision. I think it changes the whole outcome of a fight. Look at how many, like John Jones, he's a beast to begin with, but I'm not saying he does it on purpose, but there's always the thought, does he put his hand out there?
Maybe he's not doing it on purpose, but he's not 100% innocent in the situation either.
Yeah, that's exactly what
I'm saying. He doesn't change his technique with, you know, where how he's distancing. And I've heard, like, people make arguments, like Joe Rogan has said, you know, something about, you know, changing the gloves around. I don't understand how they would change the gloves around in any way than what they are already to prevent eyeballs.
Yeah.
What are you going to do, close the fingers and make them boxing gloves? You can't do that. We have grapplers. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, no, I really don't think the gloves should change. I agree with you. I think they just need to become more strict on the rules when it comes to eyeballs.
I think it needs to be a rule. I think it needs to be looked at, you know, like a headbutt or, you know, or an accidental groin shot. I think it needs to be looked at the same way. You know, if someone gets poked in the eye, then they have time to, you know, to walk it off, you know, and try to get their vision back. Last thing you need is not be able to see when a heavyweight is throwing bombs at your head and you can't see them coming. You know?
Yeah, well, that's the last thing you want. those were two big guys in there throwing punches. Now, then you have the other incident during the Anthony Pettis fight and Eddie Alvarez fight, grabbing the fence. Now, the referee in that bout, Eddie Alvarez was hanging onto the fence while he's clinching Pettis up against the fence. Now, the ref told him at least five times in that one round.
The ref should have definitely taken a point.
Or at least reposition them, take his position away and stand them back up in the center.
I don't know about repositioning the fighter because, you know, if Pettis was trying to work also, you know what I mean, you don't want to put them in a worse position and remove them out of a position that work was actually getting done at. If the fact that you have to take the point, when you take the point, then I would say, you know, break them so you can give them, you know, make sure the judges get the direction.
So stand them right back up. Put him, give the point, stand him back up.
Put him, yep.
Heather, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that'd be pretty accurate too, especially, you know, with multiple warnings, it definitely needs to be addressed and a point taken away, especially in the situation where it's preventing a takedown or allowing someone to do more damage.
Now, when someone's holding you, Heather, against the fence, or you're holding someone, how much of an advantage is that by holding the fence?
It's definitely an advantage, especially if, you know, you're working your defense and you don't want to be taken down and someone's grabbing the fence and, you know, trying to use it against you. It definitely makes a difference, especially if you're, you know, working that clinch and it's hard enough already. And then to have someone, you know, gripping on that fence, it definitely makes a difference. You can definitely tell.
Okay. Now, is that something
people don't understand how much energy is exerted when you're trying for takedowns or you're wrestling up against the cage, you know, and if you're wasting even more energy because you're struggling with someone that's holding onto the fence, forget about it. You know, it's rough.
That's definitely true, Eugene. Now, do you think that they should do the one warning, take a point, or two warnings, then take a point?
Two warnings, take a point. I think two warnings, take a point.
All right. Because I know a lot of people, it varies with depending. In that fight, I at least heard it in the second round, I think it was, or the first round. At least five times in one round, and then a couple more times in third. And it was just frustrating.
I think if a guy's going to get taken down, you know, and sometimes, you know, if you're falling, if someone, let's say, tried to take you down in a bar or something, okay, you throw your hands back to try to grab some instinctively so you don't fall. You get your one warning. After that, now you have knowledge of what you're doing.
True. Yep, I completely agree with that one. Yeah, definitely. I agree 100% with that. So thoughts on the main event last night. Dillashaw, I personally had him winning four rounds, maybe give Cruz two. I had him winning 1, 3, 4, and 5. Maybe give him three as well, give Cruz three as well. Do you think that they got it right last night, or they got it wrong, or do you think it was just a coin toss and it could have went either way?
To give an honest opinion, I would actually have to go back and watch the fight and score it myself. You know, I was watching it, but nonchalantly just looking up, wasn't really paying much attention to it. I would have to go back and watch all five rounds and sit there with my pad and pencil and score it.
I know I was talking with fighters from the Milwaukee area. We're discussing on Facebook, and he was saying Cruz outstruck Dillashaw, but then I go to the stat tracker, and they both score 109 to 109 strikes, but Cruz was mostly to the head of Dillashaw, where Cruz's strikes that he took from Dillashaw were all spread through the legs, the body, and the head. So, I don't know. It's a tough one to really decide on.
That's where it becomes the hard part with, you know, the boxing 10-point must system being effective in MMA. The scoring system in MMA is flawed. You know, so it's hard to judge.
I agree with you. There's really no points for takedowns. Like the system they have,
or submission defense, submission attempts. You know, there's no clear. You know, in boxing, you got a 10-point must system. Guy gets knocked down, he automatically has a 9.
Yep.
There's no criteria on that for MMA.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. They definitely need to come up with something a little more strict, because I know one point there was a takedown by Cruz. And I think the third round was. And to me, as a wrestler, I saw, if I was looking at it like a wrestling match, I wouldn't give the 2 point. It was like a quick, they went down and sprung right up. There was no control, nothing like that. I wouldn't give a takedown. But most people consider that a takedown because they fell to their knees and got right back up. So, hey, like you said, it is flawed. I agree with you.
Well, listen, if they went for a takedown, they fell to their knees, and nobody, you know, went to their back or had their, you know, butt hit the floor in a grappling tournament, you know, in a jiu-jitsu tournament, they wouldn't get the 2 points for the takedown.
They wouldn't, right? Because they don't have the control of the back. It's the way that it looked for me as a wrestler. Like, I saw him out to the side, kind of like got Dillashaw down, but didn't have any control and just wasn't behind him. And then they sprung right back up. So, yeah, I agree. They need to find a new system or come up with something of their own, maybe they can come up with. So, well, what's next for Dillashaw Cruz? Possibly, Cruz might be injured. He says he has plantar fasciitis, which is the same injury that Peyton Manning had. He's back playing in the playoffs, as we all know. So, does he fight Faber in the title defense, or should he fight Dillashaw on a rematch? Heather, what's your opinion on that?
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's fine.
I'm not sure.
You're not sure? You just go with the flow, don't you, Heather?
I do. I never have a very strong opinion either way.
All right. Eugene, what's your thoughts on that?
Does anybody really want to see Dominic and Uriah go at it again?
Yeah, this would be, what, the third time they go at it?
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't think Dillashaw was dominant enough as a champ or to deserve an immediate rematch. But in the same sense, you know, Cruz can't take a shower without getting hurt. So we don't know how long he's going to have the title.
Oh, yeah.
So.
True. I was thinking if he could stay healthy and with another title defense, I would like to see him maybe like in a catchweight fight against Jose Aldo. He would have to go up a little bit of weight, but I think that would be a fun fight for the fans. He could go up there.
I'd like to see him fight Frankie.
That would be a good one as well. I agree with you. Yep.
You know, I think Frankie has been shafted way too much, in the UFC. You know, he's a quiet guy, and you know he's getting skipped over. They're purposely bouncing Conor McGregor around to stay away from Frankie.
Because I have a feeling they realize Frankie Edgar will take him to the ground and hold him and beat the shit out of him. But
with just what happened when they booked the Mendez fight.
Yep, the
Frankie
first
was
round
the first
was
one
well
to say he'll take. No, but Frankie was the first one to say he would take that fight. When Aldo first got hurt, Frankie went on social media and said, "I'll take that fight. I'm ready right now." And they chose Mendez. They knew it was a safer bet for McGregor.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it feels like a lot of things they do is revolving around making money.
Well, I mean, in the same sense too, I can't disagree with them on that because, they're in the business to make money. It's the money fights. It's a business. Everybody wants to say, but this is a better fight. Yeah, but how many tickets is that fight going to sell? How many pay-per-view buys is that event? These events cost a lot of money to put on.
True. Yeah.
The card they had last night. I mean, having Dillashaw and Cruz and Pettis and Alvarez on a free card, where now they're just generating what they got on advertising and ticket sales.
But I feel like those free shows though probably do a lot of good for them, being that get a lot of viewers that normally would never watch the UFC. Like, I heard people watching the UFC fights because the kid from my hometown, Chris Wade, fought last night, and people I heard know have zero clue about MMA. We're watching the UFC just to, they want to, and it's free, and they wanted to see him fight.
Well, it's free advertising. Same way when that's how the UFC got their resurgence is with the first Ultimate Fighter with Forrest and Stephen. People who weren't general fans, especially back then when it wasn't so accessible as it is now. People were sitting home on a Saturday night watching these two guys beat the hell out of each other. It was like, wow. They gained instant fans from that. Jiu-jitsu schools were, with no MMA programs at the time, were signing up people that Monday.
It's crazy how things work. If you go on the My MMA News Facebook page, under the photo that our owner, Eric Cowell, posted, the photo of Matt Mitrione's eye, and it's a giant balloon.
Oh, I saw that this morning. Eric's a sick bastard.
There was another photo in the comments section that a fan put, and I thought it was absolutely hysterical. It's a picture of Matt Mitrione on one side and Quasimodo on the other side. If you want to see it, go on there. It's one of the funniest photos you'll see. You'll just laugh your ass off. Definitely, if anyone's listening, go and check it out. So we're going to jump ahead to the Long Island guy, Chris Wade. Defeated Baghdad in submission in the first round. Looked excellent in the fight. Marched across the cage. Took down a Muay Thai champion with a hip toss, a head and arm hip toss, and held him on the ground for almost the whole first round. And at 4:30 in the first round, takes his back, flattens him out with some leg hooks in, and sinks in a rear naked choke. Did you catch that fight at all, Eugene, or no?
No, that one I did not.
All right. I actually wrestled with him in high school. A great guy, a real nice guy. He looks like he just keeps getting better on each fight I've seen him on, because he keeps snagging the FS1 prelim card, which is good for him. So a lot of people are watching him. So I'm hoping to see he beat a UFC newcomer, Baghdad. So I'm hoping to see him. I'd like to see him fight who he's supposed to fight, the Russian, Mirabrest Taysimov. I don't even know if I pronounced that nearly correct.
Is he one of those guys? Is he one of the K-Dojo guys that are coming out with
I know that
they have like the lock on like all the Russians.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. I would like to see that's who he was supposed to originally fight, but then that guy pulled out for injury or whatever reason it may be, and then they replaced.
Probably would have been a better match style wise because that guy's a wrestler, Sambo guy.
Yep. And then, or I would like to see him fight Kevin Lee. I think those two guys would match up with Chris Wade nicely, and I think it would be a good fight for Chris. So, Heather, we're going to jump to Jojana Jacek. I'm sure I'm butchering the girl's name. And Claudia Gadala, the coaches of Tough 23. What are your thoughts on female coaches for the Ultimate Fighter?
I think it's awesome. I think those two as coaches would be really good. I got to do a seminar with Joanna when we were out in Vegas for the Invicta fights, and I could see her being a very intense coach. I think she'll do a really good job.
Awesome. All right. Now, how much has the sport evolved now, the fact that women are actually the coaches on the Tough Show? Do you think that's important for the sport for female fighters?
Yeah, to have women in that position is really awesome. It definitely shows that not only are they now part of the UFC, but they're actually a respected part of the UFC. I mean, you're going to have women running the show. And I think that we saw with, Misha and Ronda that that's definitely marketable, but it's also very good for the athletes on the show as well.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to this show. Now, I haven't really heard a whole lot about it other than the fact that they announced the coaches. I'm assuming it's going to be female fighters, or does anyone know if it's going to be male fighters under female coaches or vice female fighters for female coaches?
I haven't heard 100%. I know there were tryouts for both. I know there was strawweight tryouts for women. There was also bantamweight tryouts for the women. They ended up actually canceling that division. But I think I'm not sure which division the men tried out.
Okay, all right. Awesome. So, yeah, that show, that's April 20th, is a two-hour season premiere airing at 10 p.m. for all of those who want to watch. 32 competitors, they say, fighting for 16 slots, 8 in each weight class. So, all right, so there is two weight classes. And they're supposed to fight, I believe, the women are supposed to fight on the next day on April 20th, not 20th, after the show. So, show ends, and then the next day, the women fight. Your thoughts on that fight, Heather? Do you see one fighter taking it over the other?
I think it definitely is a good matchup. I mean, I want to see Joanna hold on to her belt. I think that she's a really great champion, but I think that she will have her hands full with Claudia.
Awesome. All right. I think I'm looking forward to seeing that. I like watching Joanna, the Polish woman. I like that. It's so hard to say her name. But I'd like to see her fight. She's fun inside the cage. She goes after and starts swinging away. So she's very interesting. I know a lot of fans who haven't been into her. She's kind of pulled a lot of people in just seeing a new champion. She's not a grappler. I know a lot of people get bored with grappling, even though I absolutely love it. But pulls people in when she's knocking people out left and right. So I should just bring, I think, open up a lot of eyes to a lot of women who are looking to fight. So it should be interesting, the new season, Tough 23. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be right back with Eugene, and we're going to talk about aggressive combat sports and as well as the USMTA. So, ladies and gentlemen, just hold on one moment. Feel free to contact us on social media at MyMMAnews, or by calling in at 213-943-3517. All right, we'll be right back. Combat Championship. It's an amateur fight promotion that takes place in Queens, New York. And Eugene is also the state director of USMTA, the United States Muay Thai Association, which is a sanctioning body for amateur promotions and professional Muay Thai promotions in the state of New York. Eugene, thank you for coming on. Can you tell us about How did you become a matchmaker, and how long have you been doing it?
Well, I started out, you know, in the sport, you know, kind of like anybody else, as a student, as a competitor. I was also the vice president of Grapplers Quest for a number of years, and we did shows, you know, New York, New Jersey, California, Vegas, California, Texas, you know, all over the country pretty much. Then when I left Grapplers Quest, you know, I acquired the Aggressive Combat Championships, me and my partner Tom Kilkenny, and we were doing a lot of kickboxing shows in the beginning, before MMA opened up in New York. And then we started doing MMA shows, and I've just, because of my connections in the business and my relationships with a lot of schools, and a lot of school owners that, you know, I competed with back in the day, it was just kind of natural for me to shift into the matchmaking part of it due to my relationship with them.
Excellent. All right. Well, February 27th coming up, that's your next show. It's ACC 14. Can you tell us about the three title fights coming up and what we can expect?
Well, actually, I got an announcement. There's going to be a fourth title fight.
Oh, excellent.
All right. This is a major announcement. I haven't even announced it on social media yet. Ken Sweeney of Henzo Gracie in Brooklyn will take on Dami Powerson for the light heavyweight title.
Oh,
that
awesome.
It was going to be a number one contenders match, and now it's going to be the title match.
Excellent. Ladies and gentlemen, you hear that. Eugene Perez of ACC, Aggressive Combat Championship, announces a fourth title fight on Carol's Corner. You said it was a number one contender bout. Now it's a championship bout?
Yep, we're going to make it a championship bout. Both guys have, you know, had their fights under their belt. They really want it. You know, and I said, you know, the hell with it. We'll make it for the belt.
Excellent. All right, now which, I know there's four title fights. Which is the main event of the evening, the last fight to happen?
Oh, that'll be announced as we get closer to the event.
Okay.
More than likely, the main event is going to be Cub Wasswiller taking on Anthony Newton. Cub from Evolution Grappling Academy up in Beacon, New York, taking on Anthony Newton out of the Jungle Gym in the Bronx.
Awesome.
For the 145-pound title. Both these guys are on winning streaks. Both come from grappling backgrounds, schools with strong grappling foundations. But they come to fight. These guys are tough. You know, I'm sure, you know, a couple more fights and their coaches will probably be looking to take them pro within the next year or so.
Awesome. That's awesome. I always enjoy going to the ACC fights. They're always excellent matchups. Now, when you put together these title fights and the regular undercard, what goes into putting them together and matching up certain opponents to other opponents?
A lot goes into it. You know, coaches submit, you know, a list of their fighters, their weights, their experience. You know, and then as I get the list in, you know, I already start thinking in my mind possible fights for them, you know, in the database in my head. And as more lists come in, you know, I match them up, you know, equal experience. Or, you know, a lot of times you'll get coaches that will request a fight, and it'll sound like a good match, and I'll reach out to the other coach, and, you know, they're all for it, and we make it happen. It's definitely probably the hardest job in the business, you know, besides getting in there. Because it's not a normal 9-to-5. I'm up at 2-3 o'clock in the morning making matches, or 7 o'clock in the morning. I'll get a text message from the coach. You know, this guy wants to fight. And I jump on and I try to make it happen.
You know, I would have to. That definitely seems like a really tough job because I feel like if the fight card isn't good, the promotion doesn't do well. So if you're not able to match up quality opponents against each other, just kind of flops, right? Like, that's pretty intangible part of the show, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's two different things. You know, when you're putting together the card, okay, you're also thinking about, for, you know, from a promoter standpoint, you know, and, you know, from a financial standpoint, you know, this fighter's coming in, you know, how much support are they going to have? You know, if I got a match that's only selling 10 tickets between them, they're going to go on the beginning of the card. I'm not going to put them in a high spot on the card. You know, or if they, you know, they're not necessarily, you know, let's say they got, you know, two guys that are 0-0, they're going to start out the card. So fighters, you know, work their way up to the co-main event, to the title matches as they work their way up the card.
All right, so fighter, an amateur, which makes sense, an amateur fighter that's able to sell more tickets, and as a decent fighter, makes his way higher up onto the list.
Yeah, no, before, of course. You know, it is a spectator sport.
Awesome.
You know, so you want the support. Nobody wants to come out there with crickets in their corner because they have no support from their family and friends. Especially on the local scene. You know, if you're a fighter that has to travel, then you can understand. But when we do our shows in Queens, New York. If you're coming from the five boroughs, you should have some support.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's not that far of a travel for a lot of the fighters in the area. Now, do you bring in a lot of fighters from other areas, or is it mostly New York, Long Island?
No, I don't. I'm pretty good with, you know, having all my connections in New York. I really don't. And I know I say New York, the tri-state area, Connecticut, New Jersey. You know, I have fighters come from Pennsylvania. But for the most part, I'd say 90% of the card is comprised of local New York fighters.
Awesome. That's awesome for New York being growing sports, the only state where MMA professionally is still illegal. So I know it seems like a lot of – you'd think that New York, the amount of people, MMA would be a lot bigger, but surprisingly, it's kind of small.
It's rough. You know, New York MMA is still in its infancy, even on the amateur scene. You know, everybody's used to going to New Jersey, which has a really well-respected amateur program. You know, and New York, like I said, you know, you have the organizations that are well-organized, that have good matchmakers. Then you have, you know, unregulated shit shows where the matchmaker can't match his socks. And that happens, too.
Definitely. We have a caller on. Ed, is that you?
Yes, it is.
Ed, how you doing? This is Ed Kinner. He's the director of USMTA. I understand that you have something you want to get off your chest. You want to tell us a little bit about it?
Here we go.
There's a promoter in the New York City area, Lions Roar Promotions. Their last three shows have not been sanctioned by the USMTA for the simple fact that the promoter fails to comply with our safety regulations. We require advanced life support ambulance stationary at the event. We require medical insurance on the fighters. Just really strict. We don't deviate from that. And he's failed to comply. So we haven't sanctioned his shows, his last three events. And he had a show on Saturday and gave the impression to trainers and fighters that the show was sanctioned. It's a very bad thing. I just wanted to call in and let, you know, people know that Lions Roar in New York City is not sanctioned by the USMTA, nor will it ever be again. And Willie Rivera is not a member of the USMTA. He's not a representative of the USMTA or anything. I feel really bad that a lot of trainers and fighters went there to compete because they thought it was a sanctioned event, and they were pretty much bamboozled by this guy.
Now, what does it take to become sanctioned by the USMTA?
You would contact the USMTA. If you were a promoter, you'd contact the USMTA, and we would send you a promoter's packet. Inside the promoter's packet are our rules and regulations, an application to sanction, workload of information in reference to our rules and regulations. You would fill out the application, submit it back to the USMTA, then it goes in front of a board, depending on the state that you want to sanction, and say here in New York. Then it would go in front of a five-member board here in New York. We would research your event. We would look at your fight card. We look at the fight card to make sure that there's not professionals on an amateur card, to validate records, make sure that, you know, it's an actual person that's training and not somebody that's, you know, training in the backyard somewhere and they have some experience. Once we either approve or deny that, we return a letter to the promoter, telling the promoter that their show will or will not be sanctioned. If it is sanctioned, if you get a letter stating that your show is sanctioned, you have 7 days to provide proof of fighter insurance to the USMTA. That it's like a accidental insurance for a fighter. If they get hurt on your show, amateur fighters aren't paid. Now they don't have to worry about an emergency room bill because that's what that insurance covers.
Okay.
You pay your sanction fee, and then we come the night of your weigh-ins. We have an official that comes, does your weigh-ins. Then we show up at your event about 3 hours ahead of time. And, you know, the rest is pretty much history. Anybody's gone to any aggressive combat championships, MMA Platinum Govs, Warriors Cup. Those are all sanctioned by the USMTA.
A big thing with the difference between the USMTA and other sanctioning bodies is our course certified officials. You know, there's a screening process. There's a shadowing process. You know, there's a course you have to take. There's a test you have to take. You know, just because you pass that test doesn't mean you're automatically going to work. Now there's going to be a shadowing process where you come and you volunteer your time and you sit back and you learn. You know, thinking about refereeing and judging, you can go in front of a class, but it's a hands-on learning experience. And, you know, and we really screen the officials before they get a chance to work.
Not even the officials. I mean, we screen promoters. We don't want bad guys, you know, making money off amateurs. You know, we have very strict requirements. Certified officials, doctors are required to be. Starting January 1st, all USMTA events are required to have a licensed New York State doctor on premises during their fights. So I mean, it's a very, very, very strict thing, and we don't take kindly to promoters trying to cut corners. We've pulled sanctioning on. This is now our third or fourth promoter that we've pulled sanctioning on.
For various reasons, forged documents.
Yeah, we're not. I mean, the USMTA is not a mom and pop sanctioning body. I mean, we sanction both amateur and professional all over the United States. We sanction the number one professional Thai promotion in the United States right now. So I mean, we take it very seriously, and for somebody to try to sidestep that and lie to fighters and trainers, it's something that, you know, I normally don't become very vocal. I'm a behind the scenes guy, but when I caught wind that this promoter pulled this weekend, it was time for me to, you know, not only go on social media but also some media outlets as well.
Now, Ed and Eugene, how important is this, the fact that USMTA, a sanctioning body, is as strict as they are and as important as they are, sanctioning events all across the tri-state, all across Long Island and New York? How important is it for pushing towards the process of making MMA legal in New York?
It's very important. You know, before, you know, organizations like the USMTA came about and built up what we have, you know, New York was a wild, wild west. And in some regards, there's some aspects of it. When you see articles like that, what was it, that was a Bloody Elbow article that came out a couple months ago. You know, you see people downgrade New York MMA. It's because of those cowboy promotions. It's because of those promotions that are not screening for blood work. It's those promotions that are, you know, putting pros in there, putting underage people in there, putting, you know, bad matches together, no coverage for the fighter, no insurance, no doctors, no medical staff. That's why it's important, because the safety of the fighter is paramount. The fighter goes in there, they want to make sure that they're taken care of, that we have their best interests at heart.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I believe safety is number one. It's crucial, whether it's pro, amateur, or whatever else, exhibition, fun. Safety is number one for the fighters. It's important. Referees being educated and trained is very important as well. I love the fact that the USMTA trains the referees how they do, because as a writer, as a journalist for MMA on Long Island, I also used to cover out in Wisconsin, covering a lot of Heather Bassett's fights out in Wisconsin. There's a huge difference in the quality of refereeing from where I was out on an event on Long Island where it wasn't sanctioned by USMTA. Like, there was a lot of mistakes, a lot of uneducated decisions made by a referee inside the cage, and then USMTA took over, and the world of difference is insane.
We require all of our officials, including myself, Eugene, Tom, yearly to take a refresher course, you know, just to make sure that you remember what you learned day one, and, you know, to test knowledge. It's very crucial. especially when your job is just safety of that fighter. No one else is really looking out for the safety of the fighter except, you know, the officials that are working for a third party. So it's crucial. I mean, we do yearly recertifications. We hold a bunch of us get together a couple times a year. I live in upstate New York, and I drive down to New York City. Tom, Eugene, and I will all get together, and we go over things. And it's you can never be too safe when somebody's health depends on how anal retentive you are with your rules and regulations.
Yeah, definitely, and I find it very important. I know it personally. While coaching up in Wisconsin at a high school, I was asked to referee a middle school bout, a wrestling match. Referee didn't show up for whatever reason. And I remember the first match, and it just nerves. I know all the rules of wrestling, like the back of my hand. Just nerves in front of all these people. And the kids are wrestling, and I just blew the whistle for no reason. Last time I kept a whistle in my mouth. But, yeah, it's a matter of I like the fact that you guys shadow your
the requirement. At least two to three events. I can't. You know, if you come and you take a course with us and you pass the written exam, and I mean, you just don't throw that person into a live event. You want them to shadow somebody, work with somebody. You know, two or three events so they can see what's supposed to be done. And we've had people that have shadowed two and three events that we still don't let go out on their own until we feel that they're acclimated to the way we want things done.
Well, Ed, thank you. I appreciate you coming on and informing everyone about what was going on, because it's important that the fighters who are fighting in these promotions know this, because they need to be safe. They're number one. They need to be taken care of. Amateur, you're not getting paid. So God forbid anything happens, it's last thing you want to find out, there's no insurance to cover them.
Exactly. So
I appreciate you coming on, calling, and informing us.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Pleasure. Eugene, so that's just craziness to hear. That sucks that that's happened. Switching gears, I guess, a little bit, can you back to kind of more of like the matchmaking? How do you decide how do you decide how many fights you want to do in an evening? Is there like a limit you do, or do you keep it certain lengths?
No, you know what? That's one of the dangers of matchmaking. You never want to underplan your card, because the card never stays the same. You know, injuries happen in training all the time. You know, fighters fall out, you know, for one reason or another. You know, being that it is amateur fights, you know, these fighters are not locked into contracts. You know, the fighter could have a falling out with their coach. The fighter could not be paying their dues at the gym. You know, so they stop showing up. You know, you'll have this fight match, and all depends on, you know, what camp you're dealing with, on how soon they let you know this. I've had fighters pull out the week before. I've had fighters the night before not show up to weigh-ins. And then, you know,
that's really got to be the biggest challenge, I think, because I know on Long Island there's a promotion, the guy shows up for weigh-ins, coming from upstate or wherever he was coming from, I think Connecticut, and then he doesn't show up the next day for the fight. Like, what is there you
can
do? That
doesn't make any sense.
No, it really doesn't. I don't know what the guy was thinking, but weighs in. He was overweight by a few pounds, but they were giving him an option.
If he was overweight, you know, the USMCA, you have a 1 pound allowance on MMA fights. You have a 2 pound allowance on kickboxing fights. If you're overweight, the fight doesn't happen.
Okay.
That's your responsibility. That's your coach's responsibility, is to make sure that you make weight. And if you don't make weight, you don't deserve to fight.
I agree 100%.
You obviously didn't put in. You wrestled. You know. If they don't make weight, you don't fight. You don't wrestle.
Yep, that is 100%. We got another caller. See who we got here. Oh, you're on Carol's Corner. What's your name?
John.
John, how you doing, John?
What's going on, guys? How are you?
Jonathan Ruiz from Striking 101. I recognize the voice.
Glad you call.
What's going on, gentlemen? First of all, I'd just like to thank you guys for having me on, and big thanks to Eugene and Tom. I heard the good news about one of our guys, Dami Ojo Powerson, fighting for the title fight at Aggressive on the 27th of February. Super stoked, super excited. You know, we've been with Aggressive, I think, since the first or second show, and we've supported them as they supported us. And it's such a rewarding experience when you get to see your guys, you know, put in the work day in and day out, and finally to have this opportunity against someone like Ken Sweeney of that caliber. You know, I know Ken Sweeney and the whole Henzo Gracie team from Manhattan and Brooklyn. Great guys, man. Great team. Strong, you know, very skilled, obviously, in grappling. But I'm looking forward to it. And, I just wanted to call in and thank Eugene for this opportunity, and Tom as well.
Thank awesome. You. Thank you for the support and, you know, having faith on us and in Aggressive and the USMTA and putting, you know.
Always. I'm looking forward to it. I'm always, not just for this fight, but as you guys know, man, whether it's Thai boxing or Glory Rules kickboxing or MMA, man, I always tell my guys this is the show to be on. This is the promotion to fight for. And as you guys know, you know, the whole situation with the amateur and then becoming a professional when you find out in New York, I just got to say that Tom and Eugene has looked out for my guys, especially one gentleman in particular who had a tough time turning professional as an amateur. Even though this gentleman didn't fight for them, they put their hands out and they vouched for him and you know, they gave him that opportunity to step up into the professional league, which, again, it just shows what kind of from matchmakers and gentlemen that these that Tommy Jean is. You know, again, this gentleman's fought for other promotions. They didn't stick out, you know, their hand to help out, which is very disappointing. You know, most people say, hey, you know what, matchmakers just want to do it to make money or you know, make themselves look good. These two gentlemen, Tommy and Eugene, really do care about the fighters. And I can vouch for that myself. And I just wanted to, again, not just for the title fights, not just for regular fights, but just to look out for the fighters. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. Thank you.
That speaks volumes. John, I appreciate you calling in. Look forward to watching your fighter fight. We'll have to hook up and do an article or something, get something out about the upcoming bout.
I appreciate it, Kyle. Guys, great podcast. I'm still listening, man. Keep up the great work, gentlemen.
Thank you. Appreciate you calling in.
All right.
Awesome. Eugene, you know, that blows my mind that, like, people are – that doesn't shock me, actually. I shouldn't be saying it blows my mind. But it's amazing that, like, the promotion you guys put on is phenomenal. And the fact that this many people are calling in and – in support of you guys is awesome because, to be honest, I know for a fact, just talking from you talking to you and Tom, it's not about money. It's not about, making fame for yourselves or anything like that. I know for a fact that it's for the love of the sport and the love of watching these fighters grow into becoming into something that they could be, giving them a potential opportunity to become more than, you know, a platform for them.
Yeah, it's really – we look to put on – you know, we like to say we cater to the professionally trained amateur, okay?
Yeah.
We like to give these young fighters, you know, that main event experience every time they come out. You know, they want to come out – you know, you have some fighters that are looking to make a career out of it. You have other fighters that it's a bucket list thing. They just want to get in there one time. You know, they want to try their hand at it. You know, but you want their experience – you want them to get the most out of this experience. You know, the way they're handled, you know, our fighters, our teams, they become like family to us. You know, we go to our shows. It's never like going to work. You know, we get there. We know we're going to put on our show. We know what to do. But it's seeing everybody. I get to know the camps. I'm friendly with relatives of some of the fighters that, you know, that come up to us. Fighters' mothers come up to us, you know. It's like, hey, how, you know, you just see them, and it's like after all these shows, it's just a good time. You know, it's a really good time. You know, we go out of our way to thank all of our fighters individually. You know, nobody gets lost in the shuffle. You know, the coach is the same way. You know, I speak to these coaches about fights, you know, and I speak to them about, you know, daily, you know, just daily things that go on. You know, we become friends. You know, it's never like, you know, we're bigger than anybody. You know, we're on that level with you. You know, with our fighters, we don't look at it like there's no hierarchy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. The atmosphere you guys provide is definitely family friendly. That's for sure.
Our families are at the show. My daughter sits cage side. She's 9. You know, I let her get in the cage and walk around sometimes. My wife is there. Tom's wife, runs our front area. His son works for us. His brother works for us. His daughter works in the front for us. It's very, very family friendly. You come see us, you come see our family. And, it's just the way it is.
Definitely. We have another caller. Let's see who we have calling in here. Hello, welcome. You're on Carol's Corner.
Hey, Kyle, how you doing? It's Tom Kilkenny.
Oh, what's going on, Tom? How you doing?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Hey, Eugene, what's going on?
What's up?
Wanted to call. Listening to the podcast. Great podcast. I'm no stranger to social media and, putting on events and shows of my own. So I just wanted to say, Kyle, awesome job. And, also wanted to reach out to you, let you know on how much Aggressive Combat Championships really appreciates my MMA news, both Kyle and Eric, and the coverage that you give us and the coverage that you give New York Combat Sports. I just really wanted to call, say thank you so much because without social outlets like you guys, New York fighters don't get that just too.
I appreciate that. It means a lot, Tom. I appreciate that a lot. I always enjoy going to the events. You guys treat me like family, so it's always an excellent experience whenever I attend your events. I appreciate that.
Well, you know what? Just like Eugene was just talking earlier on in a program, our event is a very family style show. You'll never see Eugene and I dressed in suits, ties, things of that nature. We come, it's our job to give the fighter the most well-produced, safest platform to compete on. And at the end of the day, we're not getting in between people to take pictures with the fighters. It's all about them. We'll flank them on the side. This is their night to shine. They're the ones that put the time and the effort in. We're just happy to be able to give them that platform to compete on. And, I do have to say, talking about matchmaking with Eugene, he does an absolute phenomenal job. There's a lot of work that goes into it. Just like he said, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning. Eugene and I I think we talk to each other more than we talk to our own wives.
That's absolutely true.
There's really so much that goes into it. It's not a 9-to-5 job. It's something that you have to have a true passion for. We follow that passion in absolutely everything it is that we do. And, to hear people like, Sensei Jonathan Ruiz from Striking 101 come on and give that type of accolade, really, it means the world to us, because at the end of the day, it really is all about them.
Definitely. I agree 100%. Tom, appreciate you calling in. Before you hang up, Eugene and Tom, before I shift gears to Heather, what can we expect from ACC 14? 4 title fights? What can we expect from you? Anything, any other fights we can know about?
Yeah, I'll mention the other title fights that we didn't speak about already. We have our 170-pound title as Chris Cena Acevedo takes on Ozone Park's secret weapon, Anthony Pimpola. Anthony from New York Combat Sambo, under Sambo Steve Kofor, and Chris Acevedo under Justin Garcia at the Jungle Gym.
Which should be a war.
Awesome. Then we also have our 125-pound New York State title as Giovanni, the submission magician Alvarez, takes on Ethan Tyrion Lannister Oliveira from the Jungle Gym, which Ethan just coming off of a win this past weekend. It should be a really, stacked night of fights. I already have, I believe, 15, 16 fights on the card, 4 title fights. No female matches yet, but that's one thing about ACC. We normally have 3 or 4 female matches on every card.
Yeah, definitely. Which is awesome, because definitely help try and build the women's MMA in New York, which all could only help MMA become legal in New York. So, awesome.
Absolutely. We got what I consider, the number one 115-pound amateur female in New York right now with Jillian DeCourcy. You know, she's our 115-pound champ, and I think right now she's the best fighter in New York.
She's a beast.
At that
she just won again, didn't she, on Saturday night?
Yeah, she just won this past weekend. Yep, she just won this past weekend. She defeated we had the first female brown belt versus female black belt in New York amateur MMA history when she took on Sylvia Mondelli of American Top Team in the main event of our last event. And it was, a phenomenal fight. It was like watching a Rocky movie.
Awesome. All right, well, Eugene, Tom,
also,
I appreciate
Kyle, I hate to cut you off. I also just want to let you know, because I know there's a lot of fans, especially from New York, that are listening. March 31st is a very, very big day for New York. It's a very big deadline. Because if the Assembly doesn't get their stuff in, their ducks in a row, so to speak, and get this bill passed, the governor, Mario Cuomo, has really put in for the budget and almost in his state address that he's gonna put it through one way or the other to get MMA approved here in the state of New York. So March 31st is a very, very big day. It's a big deadline, and we're excited. I know the USMTA is very, very excited, because I'm 100% sure the USMTA will definitely be at the forefront, especially for the amateur side of things. And, of course, we're certainly looking to step up big things for Muay Thai and kickboxing, both on a professional and amateur level in New York, too. So I just wanted to throw that out there, too, because I know there's a lot of people that are very hungry for information, especially in the state of New York.
Awesome. Thank you for informing us on that. I know I'm going to circle my calendar for that. Looking forward to it. I know the UFC holds dates every year with Madison Square Garden just in case it does become legal and they could get an event right away. So they have a handful dates already scheduled with Madison Square Garden. So hopefully it becomes legal. That would be awesome. Tom?
When the governor puts $30 million into the budget, that moves mountains.
Yes, it does. That's a lot of money in someone's that's a lot of money. So, all right, Tom,
sure,
Eugene, I appreciate you guys coming on. Eugene, you're welcome
Thank
to stay
you.
On. Tom, you're welcome to stay on, too. We're going to shift gears and talk to Heather. We're going to be right back, though, in a minute, so just hang on, all right?
Thank you very much.
TJ Dillashaw, Dominic Cruz, they go the distance. With the official decision, here is Bruce Buffer.
Ladies and gentlemen, after five rounds, we go to the judges' scorecards for a decision. Dave Ginsburg scores it 48-47, Cruz. Saul D'Amato scores it 49-46, Dillashaw. And Tony Weeks scores it 49-46 for the winner by split decision and new USC undisputed bantamweight champion of the world, Dominic the Dominator.
What a moment for Dominic Cruz. Wow. What a moment.
We're back on Carol's Corner, and we're joined by King of the Cage fighter of Unified Martial Arts in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Did I pronounce that correct, Heather, at Fond du Lac?
Yep, that's right.
All right, awesome. Heather's a 3-2 professional fighter. She's got one KO and two submissions. Heather, thank you for hanging on. I appreciate you joining us on the show. You're coming off a win, a big win, looking to string two in a row. Can you tell us about your upcoming fight and when it is?
Yep, February 20th, I'll be fighting for King of the Cage again. This one is going to be in Walker, Minnesota, so a little bit of a hike from Fond du Lac, but it should be a good card.
Awesome. And your opponent, I know you were unsure at the time when I was talking to your coach, Mike Biddle, unsure of who you were fighting. Any word on your opponent at the time?
Unfortunately, it's still kind of up in the air. I know the matchmaker is working really hard to try to put something together. still 5 weeks out, so there's plenty of time. I've had opponents on shorter notice than this, so I'm not too worried about it yet.
I'm looking forward to the match. I know Mike Camp, I believe, is the matchmaker for King of the Cage, Mike Camp. Mike's a great guy, does a great job as well, matchmaking. I'm looking forward to it. So not knowing who you're fighting, is any possible opponents you think you might fight, or any certain way that you train differently or train coming up to a fight with not knowing who you're fighting, but you have a date scheduled?
Well, right now I do have the advantage of having just fought just over a month ago. So I do have a lot of stuff, you know, fresh in my mind that I know that I personally need to work on. So really right now it's just fine-tuning and making sure I'm well-rounded so that I'm ready for any opponent. So just treating it like any other training camp, just going hard.
Excellent. All right. Now, I was actually talking to a female fighter, amateur fighter from Long Island in the area, and she was curious about you fighting with Phelan Fox. I know that was a whole big controversy about the whole situation with her. She's a transgender fighter. What's your feeling and take on that?
You know, it was a great fight. I felt like that it was a really great experience. There was a lot of media attention that went along with the fight, which was kind of to be expected. But, you know, it was kind of good. You know, it was only my second pro fight, and it was a good chance to put my skills out there and really test myself. And, you know, going into the fight, everybody has their opinions, but really I just looked at it as another fight. There to fight, there to work on my skills, and, you know, it was a good fight. Made it into the second round. Kind of surprised myself at points, but unfortunately I lost the fight, but I think overall it definitely was a good decision.
Okay, cool. Now I understand you're overcoming an injury before this last fight you just fought. I believe it was a broken ankle or a leg?
Yeah, I broke my foot. I was out for just over 7 months. I wasn't able to do anything, and, you know, that was the longest that I've been out ever. You know, I've been competing at a pretty high level since I was in middle school, and, you know, it was just really a different experience to be completely out of shape, you know, to be back to square one and pretty much starting over.
Now, I don't know if you heard about, like, obviously Dominic Cruz is overcoming 3 torn ACLs, lost his belt because of it. Everyone's saying he's very inspiring. You obviously know what kind of rehabilitation and work it took to get back to where you need to be to fight and be a successful fighter. Can you kind of tell us about some of the challenges that you overcame during that process?
Yeah, I think it's just hard. I mean, especially for me, you know, the gym is such a huge part of my life. You know, I'm here every single day, whether it's teaching class or training. You know, these are the people that I hang out with in and outside the gym. So to just have that taken out from under you, yeah, have to start over and work your way back up, you know, it's really hard. I mean, I would come to the gym just to see everyone, and I was still teaching my kids class and stuff, but it's just completely different, and it's really hard to mentally, you know, not let yourself get down and just know that eventually you will heal.
True. Awesome. And while you were injured, you took the time to help with some charity work. You did St. Bold Tricks, I believe it's called. You want to tell us a little bit about that? I thought it was an awesome thing that you did.
Yeah, it was kind of one of those times where I felt like I should do something to give back. And St. Baldrick's had an event in Fond du Lac, and so I ended up shaving my head. raised almost $2,000 for children's cancer research. So it was really cool, I mean, just to have all the support that I had. You know, so many people were willing to donate and help me out, and it was really fun. The whole event was very inspiring.
That's awesome. That's a lot of money you raised. I'm sure they appreciate it. That's pretty sweet that you were able to do that. Out of curiosity, who was the person who shaved your head? Anyone win that, like highest donor or any individual?
Nope, they actually have professional barbers come and do it, because they shave it right down to the scalp. So.
Gotcha. All right. Cool. Excellent. Now, other than coming over your injuries, you're one of the very rare fighters who faces a challenge every day. You're a diabetic, and you train and cut weight with this. Can you tell us some of the challenges you face while training, cutting weight, and just living life normally as a fighter, as a diabetic as well?
I think the most important thing that I've found is knowing myself, you know, knowing how I should feel, knowing how I do feel, really paying attention to things. I think it's something that it's hard to adjust to. I mean, it's something that's not going to go away. Like I was just saying about my foot, you know, eventually it healed, and now I'm back to where I was. Well, it's so different with the diabetes because it's not going anywhere. And I feel like I've kind of had my ups and downs with it. You know, I've let it get to me at times. But I think the main thing is I've kind of let myself learn from the experiences and really have gotten better at taking care of myself and learning who and who not to take advice from, and just a lot of little things like that that make a big difference.
I was actually, you were talking about taking advice from people. I was actually about to ask, now, do you work with like a nutrition or a specific person? Because you lose a lot of weight, that I'm sure that fluctuates with your blood sugar, and then you fight the next day, and I'm sure you eat and whatnot, and you don't want your sugar to spike too high or drop too low. Is there anyone you work with just to make sure none of that, keep an eye on it, none of that happens?
Crazy,
are you okay?
Coach just crashed the interview here. I actually, just this last fight, I started working with Mike King, and he's a former UFC fighter, and he's helping me with my diet, and it's made a big difference just to kind of take that pressure off myself and let someone else, you know, do the figuring out of everything. It's hard. It's always hard, you know, when I first start dieting or when I kind of ease off on the dieting, things just go a little bit haywire sometimes. And, you know, sometimes I don't have any problems. Sometimes out of nowhere, something will happen, and it's just, I've learned to kind of take it in stride and kind of know my body and keep track of things.
Well, you know, Heather, I give you a lot of props because I feel like a lot of fighters have struggled just losing weight to make the weight class. And then here you are making weight, dealing with diabetes, and I give you a lot of props because that's not easy to do. I know close individuals who deal with diabetes every day, so it's not an easy task. I give you a lot of props for that. That's inspiring for other young fighters. And I'm assuming that was your coach, Biddle, Mike Biddle, yes, in the background, yelling?
Yep, you
always
guessed
a character. Always a character, always fun talking to him. I'm assuming he was the one who just called in, and I guess maybe just dropped the call. But definitely have him call in. I always love to hear from Mike Biddle. Interesting character. So can you tell us some of your goals leading up to this fight, goals you have for coming into the fight and for the future after the fight?
Yeah, I think after this last camp, I finally feel like I'm back to the point where I'm improving. I think the last camp was really about getting back in shape and getting back where I was, and now I feel like my goals are to improve again. I always want to be progressing and then really improving on all my skills, whether it's wrestling or my stand-up or my grappling. So that's always the overall goal. But I'm also looking to, you know, take higher-level fights and hopefully eventually sign with a higher-level promotion as well.
I know I've heard people talking about possibly Invicta, the next level. What do you think you have to do to? Do you need a knockout, a submission? Do you need to finish a person, or you just need to fight a very technical fight to get to the next level? Is there anything you think you have to do to get to next level?
I need to win. I mean, I think that's the long and the short of it. I need to prove that I'm ready to take that step. I think it definitely did hurt me having to take such a long time off, but I came back and won, and I think another win or two, and maybe that opportunity will open up.
All right. Now, I understand you have one TKO or KO and two submission victories. Is there any specific way that you enjoy winning more than another, knockout or submission? Is there, when you get in there and you, if you can have your way with the fighter, no matter what, how would you finish someone?
No, I have really come to like ground and pound. That is, my TKO was actually a ground and pound finish. Both of my submissions, I actually was going for the ground and pound, and my corner was yelling at me to go for the submission. So I probably would have just kept punching myself out until it was over if I hadn't gotten for the sub. But so I think that's something that I've really come to enjoy, is the ground game of it. I mean, I love jiu-jitsu, but being able to use elbows on the ground is awesome.
Now, do you find that, because in amateur you're not allowed to use elbows, how much of a difference does that make from amateur to pro that you're allowed to use elbows?
It makes a difference. I mean, having to worry about elbows is one thing, and having to, you know when to throw them and really be able to do damage with them can make a big difference. We fought King of the Cage a lot as an amateur, and depending on the situation, they did allow some elbows. So it was nice to kind of have that exposure to it. And, I mean, obviously that's something that we drill a lot in the gym, because you do need to be ready when you're able to use them.
Okay, cool. Excellent. I've seen you fight a handful of times in Wisconsin. I believe it was in King of the Cage while you were an amateur. It was fun to watch you fight. It's always a blast watching you get in there and beat the heck out of people. What have you learned from fighting over the years? Because you've been doing, how long have you been a fighter now?
I've been fighting for about 6 years.
6 years? What have you learned throughout the years from fighting?
Man, I mean, I've learned a lot. I mean, I think the main thing is you just learn so much about yourself, everything from managing your time to, understanding your body and weight cutting, and there's just so much that's involved with the sport, and you just meet so many awesome people. And
awesome. Yeah, no, you definitely do meet a lot of people in the world of MMA. It's awesome. We spoke about the tough coaches earlier. Do you find difficulty finding female opponents as a fighter, like as a female fighter? Do you find it tough finding opponents? Like, I know you right now you're waiting on one. Do you have a lot of problems with that?
You know, I always have. I'm not sure if it's like that for all female fighters. It very well could be. But I had a lot of trouble as an amateur getting good matchups. You know, I ended up fighting in everywhere from 25 to 145 in different cases just to get to fight. I think I was kind of hoping it would be a little easier as a pro, but it's getting there. But, yeah, it's still pretty tough to get matchups.
Okay. Back to the women coaching. Do you think maybe we'll turn people off? Like, I know, like, I guess older generation don't think women should be wrestling, fighting, or anything like that. A lot of the older generation doesn't like MMA. Do you think that with women, female coaches being seen on TV, people are going to be attracted to it or turned away?
Well, I think the people who have that preconceived notion that women shouldn't be fighting are just not going to watch it. But
okay.
I think in general, the younger generations are definitely more open to it. And, I mean, now that they're seeing women in the UFC regularly, I think that's going to make a big difference, too.
Definitely. Well, what would you say to a young fighter, an amateur female fighter, looking to trying to get into it? Maybe they have one fight, and they're trying to get more fights. What kind of advice would you say to them?
I would say make sure you have a good gym and good coaches. I've always been really lucky that I've never had to worry about setting up my own fights. I've always had a coach or a matchmaker or someone that is looking out for me and making sure that good decisions are made.
Excellent. Awesome. Well, Heather, we want to know what you do outside the gym. When you're not in the gym, you're not training MMA. I know this is where you spend a lot of your time. Hobbies. Tell us something that the fans don't know, that nobody knows about you, maybe. Give us something about Heather outside of an MMA fighter.
I'm pretty active whether it's in the gym or outside the gym. I actually was a cross-country skier my entire life. I skied all the way up through my first year of college. I was state champion as a skier. So that's something that I am lucky enough to get to do this winter. Last winter, I missed out on an entire winter of skiing. So I think this winter, that's going to be my hobby outside the gym again.
that's pretty cool that you're you said state champion as a skier?
Yep.
That's awesome. Now, can any of that, any of skiing translate to MMA at all? Do you see any similarities between the two or no?
A little bit. Like some of the workouts and stuff that we do, you know, like plyometrics and speed drills and agility, a lot of that has a lot of crossover. Obviously, skiing is much more of an endurance sport, but as far as like balance and agility and all that, there's definitely similarities. And just to, you know, be competitive at a high level is very similar.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I agree with you. I know as a wrestling coach in the past, I've always told my wrestlers or football players, I'd rather them do another sport than just weightlift. At least they keep the level of competition going, and they're still lifting. So I definitely agree with that. That's awesome. How can fans find you on social media? How can they find you?
All of the usual. I'm on Facebook. My Twitter is at Heather Bassett. I'm on Instagram. I'm still kind of easing into that one a little bit, but definitely Twitter and Facebook.
Okay. And what's your handle on Twitter?
At Heather Bassett.
At Heather Bassett, okay. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you're a fan or want to find out more about Heather, go on Twitter, at Heather Bassett, B-A-S-S-E-T-T, or find her on Facebook. Exciting person to watch inside the cage. Always tough. Definitely puts on a show. Definitely check out Heather. Heather, anything else you want to say or anything else anyone needs to know before we wrap this up?
Well, I guess I should give out a shout to Coach Biddle, since he's waiting outside the door for me.
Excellent. Well, Coach Biddle, tell him I said hi. It's always a pleasure hearing from him. And Heather, I appreciate you coming on and taking your time to talk with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, good luck in your fight, and we're looking forward to it.
All right, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we just wrapped up an interview with Heather Bassett. We also had on Eugene Perez of Aggressive Combat Sports. He's the matchmaker as well as the co-owner. It was a pleasure having them both on. I hope you guys enjoyed the interview. Next week, we're going to have another professional fighter on, bantamweight prospect out of Rufus Sport Camp in Milwaukee. A good friend of mine, O'Day Osborne. He's fighting on the January 30th card. NAFC, North American Fighting Championship, headlined by former UFC fighter Mike Biggie Rhodes. So be sure to check that out and tune in to hear him talk. He's a very smart person. He's very into learning about like the sports psychology aspect of the sport, not just getting into the gym and training. He's all about it in all different angles. Smart person, exciting fighter. Keep an eye on him. Trust me, he'll be doing some big things. O'Day is a very athletic, tough wrestler, insane hands, and he comes at people from all different angles. So keep an eye on him. Be sure to tune in next week, Monday at 7. We're going to do an hour-long show that week. This week we did an hour and a half just so we could get everyone in and talk about all the various topics we had. So social media, find us at MMA News on social media or Carol's Corner. And find me on Twitter at Giblitz, J-I-B-L-I-T-Z-77, or on my journal page. I put all the posts from my MMA News at Carol's Corner MMA. So find us on there. And it was a pleasure having you all. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you next week. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and we are out.
TJ Dillashaw, Dominic Cruz, they go the distance. With the official decision, here is Bruce Buffer.
Ladies and gentlemen, after five rounds, we go to the judges' scorecards for a decision. Dave Ginsburg scores it 48-47, Cruz. Sal D'Amato scores it 49-46, Dillashaw. And Tony Weeks scores it 49-46 for the winner by split decision and new UFC undisputed bantamweight champion of the world, Dominic the Dominator.
What a moment for Dominic.
I got 99 problems, and they all bitches wish I was ignorant. Carefree living, but I'm not Sean or Martin Louis. I'm the Cleveland nigga, rolling with the looking board. You know how I be when you start living large. I control my own life, Charles was never in charge. No sitcom can teach Scott about the drama or even explain the troubles that haunted my mom. On Christmas time, my mom Christmas grind got me most of what I wanted. How'd you do it, mom? Huh? She copped the toys I would play with in my room by myself while he by himself. He got two older brothers, one hood, one good. Independent, no, the sister kept me flying when she could. But they all didn't see the little bit of sadness in me. Scotty, I've got some issues that nobody can see. And all of these emotions are pouring out of me. I bring them to the light in you. It's only right. This is the soundtrack to my life.
Since my father died, I ain't been right since. And I tried to piece the puzzle of the universe, split an eighth of shrooms just so I could see the universe. I try to think about myself as a sacrifice, just to show the kids they ain't the only ones who up at night. The moon will illuminate my room, and soon I'm consumed by my doom. Once upon a time, nobody gave a fuck. It's all said and done, and my cock's been sucked. So now I'm in the cut, alcohol in the womb. My heart's an open sore that I hope heals soon. I live in the cocoon opposite of Cancun, where it is never sunny, the dark side of the moon. So it's more than light, I try and set some light on the man. Not many people of this planet understand. I've got some issues that nobody can see. And all of these emotions are pouring out of me. I bring them to the light for you. It's only right, this is the soundtrack to my life.
Supposed to go and try some coke, and a happy ending be slitting my throat. Ignorance to cope, man. Ignorance is bliss. Ignorance is love, and I need that shit. If I never did shows, then I'd probably be a myth. If I cared about the blogs, then I'd probably be a jackass. Don't give a shit what people talking about, fam. Hate to shake my hand, but I keep the sanitizer on deck. Hope I really get to see 30. Wanna settle down, stop being so flirty. Most of the clean faces be the most dirty. I just see this thoroughbred cooked when I'm hungry. Ass all chunky, brain is insanity. Only things that calm me down, pussy up some Cali Street. And I get both, never truly satisfied. I am happy, that's just a status lie. I've got some.
TJ Dillashaw, Dominic Cruz, they go the distance with the official decision. Here is Bruce Buffer.
We're backstage in Boston, and he is your new, but I feel like almost and still, but new, bantamweight world champion. How does it feel?
About still new.
Yeah. I mean, what is this moment like for you right now? You said all week you've just been trying to live in the moment and enjoy every single thing that's been happening. So what does this feel like?
I still haven't really set in yet, you know. It really hasn't. I'm just here, and it's so slow. Like, I'm still backstage right now, so it's like I haven't seen anything. It's weird. I really can't explain it.
I know sometimes for fighters it's difficult to assess your performance right after you get out of the octagon, but if you can think back on that fight, what really stood out as key moments for you making sure that you got that victory?
What stood out, I just had to let my instincts take over. You know, I have a habit of, I have a habit of thinking a lot. So, Eric Del Fierro, my coach, Miguel, my training partners, they all help turn my brain off. And I kind of like hand the reins over to them and say, I let them be my opponent. I let them act like it. I let them do the movements. And then I see it and I feel it and I let my reactions and I let my instincts take over. And when I do that, I'm at my best. Then you can kind of get into the zone. And when I'm in the zone, I'm hard to beat and I'm hard to hit. I'm hard to catch. And I can get into a groove.
Yeah. Do you feel like those takedowns were a big reason that you were able to seal the victory?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the thing about this sport is everybody's getting punched. You're going to take hits. You're going to take some. You're going to give some. You want to try to be on the winning end of the punches and the kicks. Yeah. But if you're not, you got to make sure and add the next piece of the game, which is the takedowns, the submission attempts, the top positions.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be hard. Like early 90s heavy metal hard.
I'm yelling and screaming and I'm loud. Roar.
Geico makes it easy. You can review and update your policy or report a claim on Geico.com or the Geico mobile app. Because shouldn't we all have a little less stress in our lives?
I'm not even upset about anything.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be confusing. Like Swedish techno confusing.
Bark, bark, meow, meow. Dance with me, purple cow. Bark, bark, meow, meow. Ooh, you lovely cow.
Geico makes it easy. With 24/7 access, all you have to do is go to Geico.com and you could save money on car insurance. It just makes sense. Unlike, you know.
Dance with me, purple cow. I like your move.